Thank you. Jonathan, if you want to. I don't know if anybody does.
Hello? Hello? Oh, I think that's it. Yeah.
Take some time, I guess.
Yeah.
Any chances we have the next
I think that one's just not connected to the system because we have it going to the two monitors. I don't. Okay. Sorry about that.
If I have this, do I need this?
That's on as well. You can just turn that
off. And I'll leave this. Welcome, everybody. Can you hear me? Is this reasonable? Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the new senators and welcome back for the older previous senators. This seasoned senators. Thank you, Tara. yes, I don't want to call anyone old. I would not appreciate it myself. But we started doing orientations for new senators 2 years ago, and I was new to governance and overwhelmed in the beginning. And I don't think it was just because I was the dean of faculty. There were a lot of procedural processes and things like that that just were new to me, and conventions that everybody else seemed to know that I didn't know. And so I just think it's a helpful exercise for those who can make it. And hello to you guys on Zoom as well. And next slide, please. Oh, nope. This right here is our new poster for this year. So it has all of the senators. And please put out this outside your office so that you're announcing to people that you are their senator and they can bring information to you that they want us to think about and discuss as a faculty. And I'm going to do the acknowledgement, and I can't read very well, so I'm going to have to. Okay. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayakono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of the Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. And then I can walk this way. Yeah. Well, so I'll do it over here. Okay, there we go. This is a good spot. Well, this is easy to read. So right after this, interim president Kotlikoff is having a reception for all of the assemblies. And so if you just walk over this way to 80 White House, there is a reception afterwards. And those of you who are chair of Senate committees, you're doing the work, so you deserve the drink. So please, you are welcome as well. And next slide, please. And on the 25th, we are having our conversation with the interim president. Some people have already mentioned that we had a faculty forum that was canceled on your calendar, but it was replaced with this event. So please RSVP, and I will send reminders out so that you know this actually is taking place. And that's going to take place in Clark Hall, and it's an hour with the new interim president. And he really wants it to be a conversation, so it's meant to be bi-directional and informal, and it's not what he's kind of going around doing his college and school tour. It's not that. And so I want people to approach with questions and just make this a conversation. I think that's going to be really important. Okay, next slide, please. So I am Eve DeRosa. I am the Dean of Faculty, and this is a faculty elected position with a 3-year term and the opportunity for two additional years for a total of 5 years. So I'm starting my fourth year. So I have this year and next year, and then we'll welcome maybe one of you into this position. Chelsea over there, Chelsea Specht, is the Associate Dean of Faculty, also faculty elected, and that's a 3-year term. Jonathan Oxhorn here is our speaker, and he's elected by the Senate. And then we have the University Faculty Committee, and anyone who is from the University Faculty Committee that's here, can you put up your virtual hand or stand? So so we have Tara, Charlie in the room, and I don't know who's online, but the University Faculty Committee is also faculty elected. Oh, is Maureen? Okay, and Maureen's there. So it's a committee of 10 people, Chelsea and I, and eight other, half are senators and half are not senators. They're elected by the faculty, and they set the agenda for the Senate, and they meet biweekly with the provost. And basically, we are thinking through also additional academic policies and procedures. And then they filter in to the Senate for the full faculty to consider. What I'm going to ask soon is for each of our Senate committee chairs to stand up and introduce themselves and to give a sense of the work of the committee and the composition, if it's meaningful. And then I'll just go briefly through some Senate functions. And then this is interactive, so please, if you need clarity on something that I have made opaque, please put your hand up or just unmute and ask your question. And then we'll just also have a period just in case there's additional questions that haven't come up during the presentation. Next slide, please. So Bob, you get the ability to introduce yourself first.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Bob Weiss. I'm a professor in the Department of Biomedical Sciences at the Vet College and Senior Associate Dean at the Graduate School. And I'm here representing the A.D. White Professor at Large program. So this program is really designed to bring the world's most distinguished scientists, scholars, artists to campus to engage with the Cornell community. We currently have 20 appointed faculty on our roster. They represent all disciplines. So this is arts, humanities, life sciences, physical sciences, social sciences. It's a remarkable cast of individuals. They've won every award you can think of, Nobel Prize winners, MacArthur Genius Award winners to Emmy and Grammy Award winners. When faculty are appointed in this capacity, they visit campus for two immersive week-long visits during their six-year appointment. And we really aim to have broad engagement. So this program is designed to go beyond the traditional disciplinary boundaries that we're used to at Cornell. And we also like to see engagement across all individuals on our campus, students, faculty, staff, and actually the broader Ithaca community. The selection committee that I chair has 10 appointed faculty on it, as well as 3 ex officio members. So Dean of Faculty, Dean of Students, Dean of the Graduate School also serve on that committee. And one of our main tasks is selecting A.D. White professors at large. And we have a rigorous process for receiving and reviewing nominations, and that will kick off soon. So keep an eye out for an announcement, and we'll receive nominations for the next group of 80 White professors at large soon. So it's a terrific program and terrific honor to serve on this committee.
Thank you. And what I loved about when I first started on that committee, I was reading about the history. It was established almost immediately with the university because they understood that we're in this rural location, and they wanted to bring the world to Cornell. So it's expected to bring that level of talent to our students and to our community. So it's a really wonderful committee. The next one, academic freedom and professional status of the faculty.
Thanks, Eve. So I'm Dr. Tracy Stokel, and I'm a professor also up at the veterinary school. Got some good veterinary school representation here. I am the chair of the Academic Freedom and Professional Status of Faculty, which is quite a mouthful, but what we are involved with, and there are several members of the committee coming from various colleges and units across campus, as well as undergraduate and graduate student representatives on our committee. And what we're involved with is anything involving academic freedom, but also policies related to promotion and tenure for tenure track faculty. We address items that are brought to us from individual faculty, that are brought to us from the dean of faculty, or various committees that have been assembled by the president or the provost to address certain items, such as the Committee of Expressive Activity. We'll be looking at the documents and providing input, which usually goes back to the dean of faculty, and then she passes that back onto the committee. So our busyness depends on how much work we're essentially given, but there is one initiative that's coming out of the committee that we've developed, and that is a resolution on collaborative scholarship, which we hope to get to the Senate in October, which is just to acknowledge that collaborative scholarship is being done more and more at the university. And there needs to be guidance given to faculty on how to achieve promotion when they're doing collaborative scholarship as part of their tenurable activities. And that's it.
Thank you, Tracy. The next committee is the Committee on Academic Programs and Policies. And Mark is over here.
I get a car. Okay, I'm Mark Milstein. I'm a clinical professor of management in the College of Business over at the Johnson School, and I'm also the faculty director of the Center for Sustainable Global Enterprise, which is also in the College of Business. I chair the Committee on Academic Programs and Policies. We basically review any programs and policies that might come through to us from the Dean of Faculty that transcend any one school or college. So usually when they have multiple implications for multiple schools, colleges at the university, we'll look at it. There are, I think it's 9 members, one undergraduate student member, and then 3 ex officio, including Eve and Chelsea and now John Silicano. I think that's basically it in a nutshell.
Pass the mic to Rebecca.
Yes.
So Rebecca is Educational Policy.
Thanks. I'm Rebecca Nelson, as Eve said. I'm in the School of Integrative Plant Science, where I serve as the Associate Director for Research, and in the School of Global the Department of Global Development, soon to be the School of X, as we merge with Natural Resources. So the Educational Policy Committee, like the others, responds to whatever Eve reckons we should contend with, but in general, it's requirements, grades, exams, schedules, calendars, issues like that. And I think what I appreciate about it in part is that we're looking at issues of fairness to the students, what appears on their transcript that might affect, you know, how they're viewed when someone sees that transcript, of issues that affect the, you know, what work can be assigned in relation to breaks that students should be relaxing during, issues related to the fairness to faculty. For example, how can the faculty who focus on teaching or extension or research, how can they have a clear path to promote to, you know, a good career path? And sometimes issues to do with the fairness towards the university, how can the intellectual property of the university not be misappropriated by students with their phones in class or whatever. So I really love getting to interact with a diverse faculty more than I normally would in my own schools. And so, yeah, I appreciate the chance to serve and look forward to the latest.
Thank you, Rebecca. So I'm next. So I'm on FACTA, Faculty Advisory Committee on Tenure, I think. And I never let you guys know that I'm a neuroscientist in the psychology department in the College of Human Ecology. So I should have said that. So the composition of this committee, there are 20 of us. It's a large committee. And this is the committee that reviews all of the dossiers and is advisory to the provost. So all tenure dossiers go through this committee. And there is an appointment from every college. So that's the 15 committee members, and then 5 that are appointed through nominations and elections, and appointed by the Senate. And so that committee reviews every tenure dossier And if any one reviewer, so every dossier has multiple reviewers, but if any one dossier has something that feels like it should have the full committee's eyes on it, a committee member can suggest a full review, and the whole committee gets together with the provost and deputy provost and discuss that case. And so it's a very important committee in terms of sort of an institutional oversight for what the faculty deem as excellence before it goes to the provost. And I will go next to, and I can't see well, so Ashley, are you online? Oh, okay, there you are.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ashley Newman. I am an associate clinical professor of clinical pathology in the vet school. And this is my first year chairing FACAP, so the Faculty Advisory Committee on Athletics and Physical Education. So what our committee is concerned with, a variety of things, one being the graduation requirement for physical education for the Cornell undergraduates. You may have heard in this last year, we reaffirmed the graduation swim requirement. So we helped to revise that. And we're also, what I've just been doing recently is chair is reviewing the missed class timesheets for athletes. So any of you teaching undergraduates, you may receive those from student athletes in your course. And so that has oversight not only from the athletic department administrators, but then I look at it and make sure that any time that they're missing for athletic competition is minimized as much as possible. And we have a policy to guide that. So I would certainly ask that if you receive those, try not to receive them with a feeling of like these students are slacking or trying to get out of class. These are really hardworking student athletes that are committing themselves to their sport and representing Cornell at the league level, sometimes national level, and even international level. We have some former Olympians. So there's that. And then really just any other matters involving either physical education or athletics. We have a variety of faculty members, and we also have student representation, both undergrad and grad student. And then also the Red Key co-presidents that are students. So the Red Key Honor Society of student athletes, they are represented. And then we have administrators that don't have voting privileges, but certainly come to us with questions or issues that we can work through together, as well as anything that comes from the Senate that needs our attention. So yeah, feel free to reach out if there's any questions, and that's about it.
Hi, I'm Don Kankel. I'm professor in the Department of Economics in the Brooks School of Public Policy. I am not the chair of this committee, the Financial Policies Committee. That's Louis Shang, also from the Vet School. He couldn't make it today, but he's the guy that's done all the work and deserves the drink that I'll take that responsibility for him too. So the Financial Policies Committee, I think of sort of at the intersection of university finance conditions and policies and academic policies and us academics. And that intersection of those Venn diagrams is very, very large. Almost anything at some level that the university is doing financially can end up affecting us as academics. So we have about a 10-person committee. We have representation from people on the contract colleges as well as the endowed colleges. We do not have any decision-making power. We meet regularly with the provost and other financial administrative officers at Cornell, and we assist them in, I think, mainly in the sense that we provide a conduit for communication between the faculty and give the faculty perspective on things that are going on at the finance. So what else did I want to say? So I guess that's the main thing I want to say is that that faculty input is what we're trying to do. So to give you a few examples, before my time there, I understand the committee was very busy during COVID, giving a lot of feedback on what happened there. We're having sort of continuing discussions about salary equity issues, an issue that sort of bubbled up, I think, more from us and from interactions that some of the committee members have had, concerns compliance issues and issues dealing between the faculty and the Office of Sponsored Programs. And we may that might be a discussion will continue over the course. I think it will be a discussion will continue over this year. So if any of you are interested in any of those things or just more generally in finances, talk to this committee, usually not me again, but Louis Shang.
So my name is Phil Nicholson. I'm a professor in the astronomy department. So I actually am the chair of the University Lectures Committee at the moment. And unlike some of the other committees you've heard, we have a fairly simple cut and dry job. The university lectures are single or short series of lectures where we invite distinguished outside people to come to the university, unlike the not quite the same as the A.D. White professors that you heard, where people come from a lengthier period. So the university lecturers usually come and give a single lecture, so they're here on campus just for a day or so. The messenger lecturers are asked to give a series of three lectures, so they're typically here for a week or so, and they're usually connected lectures on some subject that's related to one another. So a few relevant points. There's seven faculty on the committee, which are drawn from all of the colleges across the university. We also have two student representatives, one undergraduate, one graduate student. That's proven to be actually very successful over the last couple of years since we introduced that. They've been, by and large, very active and useful. Probably the important things for you to know is that the lecturers themselves are nominated by you, meaning the faculty as a whole. We don't go out and look for them. We serve as the adjudicators. We look at the proposals that come in and decide which ones we would like to have. So we rely on the faculty to submit nominations. Once a year at the moment, based on last year's calendar, that would be October 7th this year, a little over a month would be the deadline. But once they come in, we keep applications alive for 2 years afterwards. So if it doesn't work for 1 year, first year for some reason, we'll automatically keep them in the list if they're approved for next year. So the messenger lectures are for three of them. The subject can be essentially anything that's of relevance to the university, but one of the emphases we place is that it be of broad interest. So not just of interest to you and your five or six cronies in your lab, or not even necessarily just to your department, but somebody that will bring interest from multiple departments. So what we ask people to do is to send us a letter initially, and that can go to Jill Short in the dean's office. That comes to us. That letter just needs to tell us the name, the title, the area of expertise of the person, and a few sentences as to why you think they would be interesting to a broad range of people. We will give you some feedback based on what we've seen there and what we know about other applications to be, and say, yes, we think this is a goer, please make a real proposal, or no, we think it's too narrow, could you give us more information or think of somebody else? And then when you send in the full letter, that has to come with supporting letters from faculty in other departments to mostly testify to the fact that, yes, this person is of interest not just to historians, but to geographers and government people and astronomers and other people as well. And finally, there is an honorarium. We pay, as a direct honorarium to the speaker, we pay $5,000 at the moment for the university lecturer, or $10,000 for messenger lectures. You get three lectures, which increased somewhat from what it used to be. In addition, we cover the cost of their transportation to campus, staying on campus for the couple of days, for the example, for university lecturers. And we pay something to the department so they can cover a cost of a dinner with the speaker and some students, and usually a reception that's held too. So it's fairly generous. These are all covered by, these all come with endowments. So actually we have a reasonable amount of money in the budget to pay for these already. So. One of the few places on the
Hi, I'm Ravi Ramakrishna from the Math Department, and I'm chair of the University Faculty Library Board. It's a 14-member committee with one undergraduate, one graduate student, and various faculty representing most of the colleges and units at the university. Our charges are to help formulate broad library policy, to represent the interests of the library to the faculty and the administration, and to keep the librarian informed of the needs and concerns of the faculty and students while maintaining and promoting the welfare of the library. And certainly we've all learned from each other coming from different units about the different needs that different people have for the library. But it's sort of anecdotal. And one of the challenges that I would actually appreciate help from is if people would go back to their units, maybe have some discussions, and come back to us with, like, here's what this group needs, and also here's what this group can contribute to you. And that would be great. My email is up on the screen there, and we would welcome input. Thank you.
So, Faculty Committee on Music, here's Roger.
Hi, I'm Roger Gilbert from Literatures in English, and I'm the incoming chair of the Faculty Committee on Music. The main purpose of this committee is to advise and support the Cornell Concert Series. And I want to say, you know, that the concert series has been doing very well in the last few years under the leadership of my predecessor, Bruce Johnson, as chair of the committee, and also and especially Deborah Justice, who's been the concert manager. And together they have really broadened the appeal of the concert series in all kinds of ways by bringing in artists like Snarky Puppy, who does, you know, the group that does a blend of jazz and funk and all kinds of things. That was a big sellout, as was the National Orchestra of Ukraine last semester. And all these concerts are in Bailey Hall, so that's a big space to sell out. Also, the concert series has been doing a lot of more community outreach in the last few years, programs with schools and so on, so that we hope to be able to continue that. The main mission of the concert series as filling the need for musical events that are not covered by the Cornell Concert Commission, which is the student-run group that brings in the big rock and hip hop and other popular performers. So we always do a lot of classical, but we also do world and folk and jazz and all of the things that wouldn't be represented by the student concerts. I'll just shamelessly plug the upcoming season. We have Tuba Skinny is the first act. That's the first concert that's coming up. New Orleans based band. Then Mariachi Herencia de Mexico is coming, and then the Danish String Quartet. That's all in the fall. And of course, if you subscribe, you get a big discount. So you should really, if you're interested, you should think about doing that. I'll just note that over the summer, there was a sort of reorganization of responsibilities in the music department around the concert series. So we don't quite know yet how our partnership between this committee and the concert series is going to work going forward, but we're hoping that will become clear soon. But in the meantime, if you have suggestions, ideas, thoughts about the concert series, please do get in touch with me by email or otherwise.
Thank you, Roger. And this is also another committee. The Faculty Committee on Music was one that was established essentially when the university was established. So it has longevity, let's say.
Hi, I'm Chip Aquadro, AKA Charles. If you call me Charles, I think you're a salesperson or something, so I won't answer you too. Anyway, I'm a faculty member in molecular biology and genetics, so the biological sciences. I'm a geneticist. My appointment is actually in the College of Arts and Sciences, and I chair the University ROTC Relations Committee. Now, some of you may not even know what ROTC is. It's called Reserve Officer Training Corps, and this is a college program that trains students who enroll in this program to actually go on to be commissioned officers in the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, or the Marines. Cornell has had a long tradition, actually, since its founding as a land-grant institution. It had military training as part of its mission early on in 1916 or 16, the National Defense Department formed ROTC programs, and Cornell was one of the first to adopt it in 1917. And we're the only Ivy League institution that has Air Force, Army, Navy, and Marine Corps ROTC programs here on campus. The only way you probably have any contact with most of this is if you teach a student and have a student in that, you may not even know. But these are the groups that are often out early in the morning running on campus with carrying flags or things like that. These are our individuals that are training. And it's really a superb program. My son went through the program here at Cornell, was in the DISA school, went it through the Marine Corps ROTC, and then served in the Marines for 6 years as an officer. And this basically, our committee serves basically as university oversight for this program. It's run, the ROTC program is run by military officers that come to Cornell as part of one of their kind of assignments and things. They sign up to actually come here to, in fact, teach these ROTC students. And so our job is, they are well vetted by the military service. Our job is to help them transition to a university, an Ivy League university setting. We also interview them to see, are they in fact really, you know, because they're joining the faculty during the time that they're here, which can be anywhere from 1 to several years, and to help them in that transition for dealing with, you know, undergrads who also have other classes and things like that, but are committing to a military career, at least for a period of time. So we have a total of 6 faculty members from across the university that are on the committee. We also have 4 undergrads who are either current ROTC students or veterans that also serve their non-voting, but they contribute a lot to the discussions. We also, in addition to providing that interview process and interface to deal with candidates coming in, we try to work with the candidates when they get here to help them basically make the transition to being in a university. And we're increasingly this year particularly working on trying to address the fact that different colleges accept different amounts of coursework credit from ROTC. The students take a lot of courses that are ROTC only courses. The College of Arts and Sciences does not give them credit for any of those. The College of Ag and Life Sciences and Engineering gives them credit for quite a number of those credits. We're trying to figure out how to kind of work that so they get more academic credit for things that really, in many cases, are very academic academic courses. So that's our charge. And we basically see anywhere between 4 and 8 or 10 new officers coming in every year. And we, again, do the interview process and try to help get them settled in there. So thank you.
Yep. I should let you guys know there's water in the back if you're interested. And the reason why I love doing this, and I'm so glad that the new senators get a chance to see the chairs, because there is just, I call it a faculty volunteer engine. There are hundreds of faculty that are contributing to our quality of life. And so, and our students' quality of life. So I really like for the senators to appreciate that it's not just what happens in the meetings, but it's all the work that the committees do, and it filters up to the Senate. And so I just like to acknowledge that. Next slide, please. This is who we are. I like to remind everyone that as a Senate, we're representing 3 campuses, and we're representing 1,600 university faculty. So the university faculty are tenure and tenure track, and the research, teaching, and extension faculty, and these are contract faculty who have expertise in research, teaching, extension. Many RTE actually have multiple titles, so we actually always have to count their primary title. And we have 88 departments, 135 senators, and we have our 12 committee Senate committees. We also have 2 working groups. One, I left one that was pre-existing, and that is a faculty committee helping with RTE faculty issues. So the RTE faculty are relatively new to the Faculty Senate, and so this is to help engage and transition RTE into the Senate, for us to also look for equity and inclusion as faculty in each of our departments. And so trying to give equal access to the campus, equal access to all the resources of the department as faculty. And the other working group is a relative, it will be standing this semester, and that is to address even application of academic integrity. So not only to oversee, to look over
the policy and refine it and make it more less, call it burdensome, for lack of another word, and then also to make it more modern, to acknowledge that we're in a time with generative AI, and so how does that look for the faculty? And so we have representation from every college and school, the graduate school, and also the School of Continuing Education will be invited, as well as CTI, the Center for Teaching Innovation, and the Vice Provost of Academic Innovation, and the Vice Provost of Undergraduate Education. So we're really doing this a comprehensive overview of what we have, and to make it that more faculty actually follow the procedure, so sanction violations of the academic integrity. We're finding that many faculty, especially newer faculty, are not doing so because it's such a cumbersome, burdensome process. So can we refine it? And we're also reviewing a pilot program that's happening in the College of Computing and Information Sciences. And it's called Accepting Responsibility. It's almost like going to traffic court for those of us who have been there, where you can accept that you have violated the policy, but you do not have to go through the process and have anything that's on your record. You can go through education about what you did wrong, and you get one shot at this. And then if you violate again or you're a repeat offender, you cannot go through this accepting responsibility education process. So we're also looking at that to understand the data and whether this is something that could be meaningful to the entire campus. So those are our two additional working groups. Next slide, please. I realized that I didn't have Jonathan introduce himself, Chelsea and Jill. So Jonathan.
Hi, Jonathan Oxhorn, 2 years out of being a professor in the Department of Architecture, now in retirement status, and serving as the speaker of the Faculty Senate, which is basically a facilitating role, supposedly with some notion of Robert's Rules of Order and governance, but basically just keeping people talking in two-minute modules and things like that.
Hey, Jonathan, Chelsea.
Oh, hi. Hi, everyone. I'm Chelsea Specht. I'm a professor in the School of Integrated Plant Sciences, and I'm also the elected Associate Dean of Faculty. One of the main roles of the Associate Dean of Faculty is to serve as chair of the Nominations and Elections Committee. So that committee is tasked with finding individuals who would be interested in serving in the various different faculty senate positions that are either appointed or elected as in a general election. And so these are positions like serving on the, serving on all the committees. And then we have a process for also working with the chairs of the committees to see who might serve as chair once a particular chair is terming out of their position. So really, it is our goal as a committee to find people who are passionate about the work that they do and want to apply that work to the university level of service. So as you all are working in the Senate, are working on different committees, if you find somebody that you're teaching with or you happen to have coffee with one day or you hear them in faculty meeting talking about something, mine is the email that you want to send that name to and say like, hey, and don't think about it as telling on your friends. You're encouraging their career development in ways that they can really make a difference. And I found that, when people might be voicing a concern and they're like, there's nothing I can do. And you're like, actually, you can do something. You can serve on the policy committee that, will make this happen for you. And so those are the individuals that seem to have the greatest impact and also can bring that back to their area of focus, their home areas of focus, be like, look at all the great things that we're doing. So our job is to get, have really great ballots so that you, when you elect people, you have wonderful colleagues that you're being able to bring into the service, and then also to identify individuals who might want to serve as appointed positions. So again, please email me if you need to. And one other plug I want to give before I hand it over to Jill is that even Jill and CA have been working really hard this last year, even more than a year, on the website. How many of you have gone to the Dean of Faculty website recently? It's awesome, isn't it? These guys really deserve a round of applause for the work they've done. If any of you were testers to make sure it works, thank you for doing your testing. You'll find everything. You know, the calendar, it's like right there. You want to know when Faculty Soup is happening? It's right there. It's everything's very easy to find, I think, for the most part. I'm thinking about when Tara asked, it's like, is Faculty Soup happening? But that was like a one-off that it was, you know, a little delayed. But yeah, there was a... So anyway, if you're looking for any information to contact people, to contact us, to find out who's on committees, you see somebody on the street, you're like, wow, they look familiar. You can go and you can see which committee they're serving on and things like that. So please feel free to use the website and encourage your colleagues to use the website as well. And I'll hand it over to Jill.
Hi, I'm Jill Short. I'm the Executive Staff Assistant in the Dean of Faculty's office and with C.A. Schugerts. Carrie Schugerts, whatever you call her. The two of us support the objectives of the Dean of Faculty Office, and Melissa Rookledge supports the Cornell Academics and Professors Emeritus.
Thank you, Jill. Next slide.
Yes. Exactly.
So Jill and CA and Melissa are the Office of the Dean of Faculty. Chelsea and I are only temporary visitors, so they really do support everything that we do.
Next slide, please.
Oh, wait, this is it? This is it? Yeah, I'm done. Faculty elected positions and just a reminder. So this is the comprehensive view of the office that we just kind of experienced with all the Senate committees and also the different faculty elected positions. Next slide, please. I wanted to give you a sense of what happened in the last year. So you get a sense of what content may come through, or the style of content, I guess. I'm for a loss of words right now, but we did policy and new legislation associated with the academic experience of our undergraduates. A lot of these actually came out of a mental health review that happened in 2019 actually. And they came out with recommendations, and many of these recommendations have filtered through associate deans and then the vice provost of undergraduate education, our education policy committee. So it kind of made its way to the university faculty committee, always getting revised, and then to the Senate, where it can get revised even further. And so these are the ones that have come to resolution. And so examples of no academic work during breaks, that used to be the culture of the university. Now it's has a little bit more substance to it. Eliminating incompletes. This is something where after a student does the work, there was still an incomplete on their transcript in some colleges and schools. So we're making it a practice so that across campus, if somebody ultimately was able to finish the course and get a grade, please remove the incomplete. Done. Mental health review. And you can see that there are also things that were important to the faculty. And so I have the RTE structural equity and inclusion, and this is something that I use so that when I go speak with deans and when I go speak with chairs and when I hear about unequal treatment of RTE faculty, I can go speak to the chair and the dean and remind them that the Senate has spoken on this in a meaningful way. We also brought a new academic title to the university through the Senate last year. And so there is now professional development for people who were hit a ceiling and were senior lecturers and could only be senior lecturers for the rest of their career. There's now a teaching professor's assistant, associate, and full in the RTE faculty titles, for example. And then the FACAPE has been working for years. So in the pandemic, there was a pause on the SWIM test, as it used to be called. It is now called the SWIM competency requirement for graduation. But when that was paused, the Senate is what introduced the swim test to the campus. And so they brought it back to the Senate and said, while it's on pause, do you think we should be holding on to this? And the first thing that I did is ask for data. And what we learned from those data were that primarily women and people of color were not able to pass the swim requirement. And so was this a barrier to graduation, or was this a life-saving skill that we were doing and giving? And so Ashley and the faculty, the FACATE committee, they went and did their research, and they went and spoke to experts around the country on diversity in aquatics. And they came to resolution that rather than an arbitrary 75 yards, three different strokes, can we tie it to the Red Cross? And it's a much more simple test. We can still maintain the safety aspect for people who don't know how to swim. And so now it's just jumping in the water, letting the water go over your head, coming to the surface for a minute, whether you tread or float, getting to the side and getting out. And the students, we went and met with student leaders on campus, and the students were very receptive. I was nervous about it, and we specifically spoke to women and women of color and the intersectionality of those two traits. And so they were very receptive. They thought it was less arbitrary, and they were thinking about all kinds of different ways to make it a really inclusive and fun thing to do rather than something scary and to avoid until your absolute last semester at Cornell and then have to pay a fine. Next slide, please. This is just letting you know other topics that came to the Senate that we didn't necessarily vote on, but we thought about and we spoke about. Generative AI Advisory Council came and shared sort of best practices. We had the TCAT turned out to be contentious and a very active discussion. I was very surprised, but parking, I've learned to call the P word because it is very contentious and comes from all different places on campus. So some of these don't look so exciting, but they turn out to be very, very engaged conversations. Next slide, please. And we have visitors that come to the Senate as well. Anybody that you would want to hear from, one of the things I'm considering for this academic year is maybe to give a financial perspective on the university. I think this is something as faculty we don't usually get. And so I think that the FPC, along with maybe the provost or the deputy provost or someone from finance can come to the Senate to give faculty an insight into sort of the sources and uses, I will call it. Next slide, please. There are resolutions online, and this slide deck will be there for those of you who want to sort of review the resolutions that have really tried to solidify the meaningfulness of shared governance on campus. I'm very struck by Cornell relative to other institutions that I've attended or worked at, how deep the shared governance is. And so they have the university assembly that has students, graduate students, professional students, faculty, and employees. So there are five assemblies. They have representation on the board of trustees. And the board of trustees here, I'm very struck by how much they love this university and its founding ethos of any person, any study. And so hopefully as we engage in shared governance, we do meaningful work for the campus. Next slide, please. This is just to let you know that the University Faculty Committee, we're the ones who set the agenda. You can bring content to us if you have an issue that you want us to discuss, if you have a resolution that you've already come to resolution on an issue and you want this to come to the Senate for discussion and potentially a vote. We meet typically 1 week before, so we met, was it today? Yes, today. So 1 week before the faculty's Senate meeting. And so if you can get information to us before that, we can discuss it in that space as we try to set the agenda for the next meeting. And I circulate the agenda to the senators on the Friday, just in case there's some pre-reads and you have time to read it, and then in the Monday message for the rest of the faculty. Next slide, please. So during the meeting, and there are somewhere on our website, we have links to different cheat sheets on Robert's Rules for those of you who are not familiar with them or need to review them. So the during the meeting, you can make motions. We like when people let us know ahead of time that they will be bringing a motion to the floor so that we can use our time effectively and meaningfully. We obviously need a quorum, so we do an attendance sign-in either physically on a sheet or online in the chat like this. A lot of people are doing it just by habit, which is awesome. Next slide, please. And you've met Jonathan. He keeps us on track, keeps us really fulfilling and the execution of the agenda. And here are the places that you can click on once you see the slide deck for help with Robert's Rules. And ultimately, Jonathan is our parliamentarian, but he can also bring in additional help if needed, if ever needed, if something's complex for us to decide. Next slide, please. I'd like to share also that we end the meeting with 5 to 10 minutes of the good of the order, where senators can bring anything that's bubbling up in their department or experiences for faculty on campus, whatever you want to use. It's not meant to be it's meant to be a subject of interest, but not anything that will be voted on in the Senate. So please bring issues to the Senate through that process as well. And these are just really about the legislative actions that you can do from the floor. And we're running out of time, so I'm trying to speed. Next slide, please. And after the meeting, so I send on the Friday after our Senate meeting, I send a Senate summary. And I try to make just a very simple, factual representation of what was discussed. And what I would love, 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 is if you just share that with your faculty, whomever you're representing, just forward that email to the group, whatever that listserv is. And what it does is if there's a topic of specific interest to someone, then they can just go to 12 minutes and 14 seconds, and I will let you know that that's when we're going to discuss that particular topic. So it really, I'm getting a sense that people are starting to do that, and I'm hearing from faculty because of it. So it really helps me do a better job. And us as senators as well. And next slide, please. These are the ways to bring a motion. You can either have four senators co-sign on a resolution, a proposed resolution, or 25 faculty, or can come from any of the committees or the UFC as well. And so, you know, bring them for us to discuss, and we'll have those sort of robust discussions on the floor. And then next slide, please. These are the meeting dates. We had CA send all of them as a calendar invite, so hopefully you've received the meeting dates and what we call the faculty fora. We don't always use the last Wednesday of the month, but sometimes we want to have a conversation, or so something really caught our attention in the Senate meeting and we didn't have time to really have a robust discussion. We might spill over into the faculty forum and continue the conversation. Please know that there are many ways also to publicly comment if you don't get a chance to speak from the floor. We have a website where you can leave comments as well. And we publicly display them. Let's see what else. Next slide, please. That's it. And I did it. And like, I have 3 minutes to spare for questions. But of course, it's only 1 hour, right? Yeah. So I'm here for to answer any questions. Yes, of course.
Hi, I'm a new senator.
We can't record it.
Yes. Hi. The main question I have is about alternates. If there's a day when we have a meeting and we can't be here either in person or Zoom, is there a set way that alternates should be registering in? How do we do that?
Thank you, Noah. And I remember meeting you at the ice cream social on like this first event that we had for new faculty. So if there is a need for an alternate, you can't attend in person, you can't attend remotely, just email us at the Dean of Faculty at cornell.edu and just let us know who will be your replacement. And we'll ensure to, we'll just bring, when I send the Senate summary, I'll send it to both of you and then it can be shared. Anyone else? Oh, yes, thank you. I didn't mention that. It was in the slides and I skipped over it in my haste. But we don't have the votes in the Senate meeting. We do it remotely afterwards through Qualtrics. And usually we give about a week. And so thank you for that reminder. So you don't have to worry about missing any votes, Noah, if that happens.
Mm-hmm. I know there was some confusion about the September 25th date, and it was a fact. It was the reason you had an invite is because it was an invite as a faculty forum as sort of a save the date for that. But now it's the invited meeting with the president and provost. So I just want to remind people that you did get an email about that and you should RSVP. Right. So and maybe I don't know if it'd be worth sending that email out again or. But just make sure that you do look for that email, do RSVP, and you can select more than one button. So if you're going to be able to make the meeting and the reception, you can select both.
Or just the
reception?
Or just...
please do send it again. It was confusing.
Okay.
Now we know what to
have
to think about it. Okay.
It's just
for
senators.
The faculty forum is for all faculty. But this is a special, that's why that was canceled, right? So this is a special thing. It's just for senators and you need to RSVP. Is it senators and members of Senate committees? Okay. Senators and members of Senate committees, because there are people in Senate committees who are not senators. And so, yes.
Bill Katt, CVM. A question on when votes are taken and new legislation is adopted. My understanding from last year is that it then goes to the Board of Trustees, right? Okay, so I misunderstood something horribly.
So after we have approved new legislation, it goes to the president of the university and the provost. And so they make their decision on whether to enact that or not. And the only thing that needs to go to trustees are things that are going to affect the bylaws. So last year we approved adding a new academic title of teaching professor for RT faculty. That had to go first to the president and the provost. They approved it. And then that had to go to the Board of Trustees for approval because that's going to affect the bylaws.
Okay, that's probably where my misunderstanding came from. But part two of this question is, how is there a formal mechanism to inform us if the legislation is formally adopted? Is
oh, I do. At least I think I do. I let you, I actually send what the president and the provost response is to the senators. So we vote on it. We say, yay, this is what we want. The president and provost, if they approve it, you'll let that know. But also if they don't approve it, you'll also know that.
Okay, I may have just missed that email. Good to know.
Maybe I didn't do such a great job, so I'll double check that.
Another question for him. Sorry, new concept to understanding faculty governance. So if they don't approve it, do we have recourse?
No. Oh, Tara, go ahead. Tara's going to answer that one. Oh, yeah. So what did you want to say, Beth? Oh, okay. So we the recourse is that we try to understand why it wasn't approved. And if we think that we can meet them and meet whatever that is that they are looking for, then we will revise our resolution and try again. So I don't say give up. We don't just walk away from it, but we just try to understand, well, what was the problem? What is it that you're not appreciating about our beautiful ideas? And then we try to refine it.
Thank you.
So we have a cocktail party waiting. And so anybody who is willing and able to walk over to the AD White House, there's a reception. Thank you. Thank you.